First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. Welcome to the SAFTAcast, the only podcast that talks to writers, editors, and publishers about everything except writing, editing, or publishing. I'm your host, Scott C., and welcome to episode 54 here on your dial. I recognize this isn't radio and you don't have a dial, but never mind. Anyway, on to today's show. First and foremost, as always, some podcast and sundress-related business for you to talk about. And let's start by talking about this program right here. We have some news. You might recall a couple weeks ago, a couple months ago, we put out a call for an intern on this program, and we are happy to announce we have one. I'd like to formally announce that Clarice Nakahama has joined this program to contribute her time and her talents to making this show the best that it can be. So keep an eye on the SAFTAcast.com website, our Facebook page at facebook.com/SAFTAcast, and our Twitter feed at SAFTAcast, as I'm sure you'll see great things coming from her. Speaking of great things coming at you, let's talk about for a moment the third annual Outspoken Performance. It is just right around the corner. Now, if this is your first time listening to the program, let me tell you what the Sundress Outspoken Movement is. It is a wonderful event where LGBTQIA+ writers come together and have their writings performed on a stage, talking about their experiences, their views on life, their viewpoint, their voice, coming to a live audience. It is a truly worthwhile thing that Sundress does, and we do it every year during the month of June, during Pride Month. I cannot stress how amazing, how important this project is, and the performance is coming. As I said, this year it happens June 25th at the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church in Bearden, Tennessee. That is June 25th, the third annual Outspoken Performances. It is amazing, folks. I cannot tell you how awesome this is. For times and ticket information, please go to sundressacademyforthearts.com. That's one word, sundressacademyforthearts.com, and click on programs/events, or visit sundresspublications.com. Again, one word, sundresspublications.com, and click on store, and search the page on both of those places for the word outspoken. It's there. What else is there to say? One more thing for you from the SAFTAcast here. A little programming note for you. We've been getting back to the Wednesday schedule, but our next episode, episode 55, which is scheduled for June 22nd, will not be coming out on that day. It will be coming out a couple days later. I hope you can forgive me. Don't worry, it'll still be out that week, just a couple days off the Wednesday release date. In other words, if you go on to your podcast listening device or site on Wednesday the 22nd and the SAFTAcast has not dropped a new episode, don't freak out. And of course, we will remind you again on Twitter at SAFTAcast, on our Facebook page. But that's for episode 55. Let's talk about episode 54. Ruben Quesada is with us today on the program, and it was, I'm just going to say this, folks, a delight to talk to Ruben. He was truly a marvelous person to chat with, and as you'll see, we have a really good conversation here today, and it gets a little heavy, it gets a little deep in places, but it also gets a little bit light in other places. This is one for the ages, my friends, so kick back, relax, and enjoy episode 54 of the SAFTAcast with Ruben Quesada, right after the theme song. Ruben.
Hi, Scott.
Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Thanks for having me.
So I usually like to start off our episodes here with the burning question that is on everyone's mind.
I can't imagine what that would be.
Well, the burning question on everybody's mind today is, everyone has a cool party trick. What's yours?
Oh, goodness. Wow. That's a great question. Well, I'd probably have a better answer if I actually went to more parties. Well, you know what? I would say that I don't even know if you'd consider this a party trick. I like to cook whenever I have parties or I go somewhere. So it's and I typically go to parties where people are eating. And so I always make these really great, somewhat spicy chicken tacos, and people just love them. They just they're always one of the first few things to go. I don't know. I know that that doesn't really like suit the question as all too well, but I'm kind of a recluse, and so it's really hard for me to kind of pull any kind of tricks out of my or have any tricks up my sleeve, I should say, at a party because I'm just not really a party kind of person. That's kind of that probably sounds really lame, doesn't it?
No, I mean, you have a special food that you can bust out, to entice the folks at a party. What makes your tacos so special? You mentioned spicy. Do you use like a special ingredient in them or?
Well, recently, over the last few years, I've been lowering my salt intake, and and that's mostly because I just love salt, and so I've had too much of it. And I've been using spices, and I've learned how to just mix and match different types of spices, and I've developed a taste for spicy foods. I didn't grow up eating a lot of spicy food at home, and so I've kind of been challenging myself with different spiciness levels, and I add a little bit of a ghost pepper spice, which is at one point I think maybe a year or two ago it was considered the spiciest pepper in the world. So I add a little bit of spice and just enough where you can taste it on the tongue and you might think it's going to overwhelm you, but it subsides pretty fast, and it's almost like a that first drop of a roller coaster. It just takes the wind out of you, but the rest of it is just kind of delicious.
Do you use spice blends or do you make your own blends or do you just kind of mix and match different canisters?
I try to focus just on one particular spice. So sometimes I'll use the ghost pepper. Sometimes I'll try another pepper called a scorpion pepper. Red pepper flakes are actually pretty nice too. I like those on all kinds of things. And that's typically what you'll find at like a place where you get pizza, right? So the little canister has like Parmesan, and the other one might have red pepper flakes. So the red pepper flakes is always a really good go-to because it's mild in contrast to a scorpion or a ghost pepper. Those are my three go-to is chipotle, or I should say ghost pepper, scorpion, and red pepper flakes.
Not a bad combo, really. Ghost pepper has become really popular. I'm seeing it on fast food menus now.
That's right. I saw that I think in a Burger King commercial recently. It's great. It's a good one.
I'm not a huge fan of spicy food, I hate to say it. I think it's just my stomach never could handle it. But
Oh my goodness.
I respect those who can.
Well, that's good. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. I'm not a fan of jalapenos, to be honest, but I do like the more spicier spices, which is kind of strange.
Do you prefer more heat or more flavor then in the spiciness?
It's about the flavor. And a ghost pepper or scorpion pepper will just give you that kind of that bite, but it'll allow you to enjoy the flavor of the food. And that might be why I turn to those.
So you don't want to overwhelm the food with the spice. You want to complement the food.
Absolutely. I don't want anything to overwhelm the food. I want it to be spicy but not underwhelming. So
When did you start cooking? Was it just something you picked up a long time ago, or is this more of a recent thing in your life?
It's certainly something more recent. I've been trying to find alternative ways to just kind of spice up the things I make at home. I spent a lot of time as a student, and when you're a student, there isn't a lot of time to spend in the kitchen. I tried to eat well, but I stopped being a student maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, and it's in these last several years that I've made more time to actually enjoy what I'm eating instead of just making sure I have something to eat. And so I've just been watching a lot of TV, cooking shows, morning shows. You get these quick little recipes that are shared on TV, and just playing around with the Food Network online, trying to find interesting things to eat and drink.
I don't know what happens. When we're young, we'll eat whatever crap we can get our hands on. I can't imagine living on the diet I lived on 15 years ago now.
Oh, well, yeah, it's probably not a good idea.
I've tried. I can't do a 2 liter of Mountain Dew and a bag of Doritos anymore. It's
Oh my goodness, Mountain Dew. It was Tab Cola for me. Tab. Oh my God, I love it. Am I allowed to ask you questions?
If you want, yeah, if something's on your mind, by all means.
I want to go back to the party trick question because there was a time where I think I'd pop into like say Urban Outfitters or Hot Topic, and you find these stores carry kind of coffee table book that are focused on kind of really unique topics. And I remember running into one about party conversations or kind of party tricks, but they never really stuck with me, mostly because I probably never had enough never t ex time or experience to put them into use. But what about you? Do you have a party trick?
I did it one time. I
Hmm.
used to have kind of like tennis elbow, but it was in my right knee. So I could grab a hold of like a chunk of my knee and kind of pull it out a little bit.
Oh,
But
my
I
goodness.
can't really do that anymore. Maybe it's just stopped being tennis knee because I stopped playing tennis. I don't know. Now I'm just kind of the guy at the parties who just, I don't tell jokes, but I know how to tell a fun story. Is that something that you're capable of? Like, are you a good conversationalist at parties?
I no. I it takes me some time to warm up to a crowd. And I think it's probably because I was raised almost as an only child, and I have two older sisters, but they're far older than I am. There's
What?
almost a decade between us. I don't know. I kind of grew up by myself, and I grew up in this area in Los Angeles that like if you think of LA like Manhattan, downtown being like Manhattan, I grew up in a part of LA that was kind of on the outskirts, like a borough, like far out, maybe like the eastern side of like Queens or something. So it's like kind of out there, and so I stayed in my neighborhood most of the time, mostly because LA has terrible transportation, and it was hard to get around. And in my neighborhood, it wasn't very safe to just go out and play and kind of meet the neighborhood kids, because as an adult, you probably didn't want your kids to go out and play with all the neighborhood kids, because the kids were probably out, like, I don't know, not doing things that were probably legal. It wasn't a safe place to play outside, right? It wasn't like a suburb. So I spent a lot of time alone, and I became very comfortable being alone. And so now when I find myself in social situations, it's kind of like I'm an observer. I really enjoy like people watching and listening to conversations and learning about people by listening and watching. So when it comes time to actually having a conversation with someone, it takes me a moment to kind of come out of my shell. But
I agree with you. I was an only child. I grew up pretty much by myself. There wasn't many kids in my neighborhood my age. So I learned to be internal. And now, as I get older, part of it is I'm not a big party person unless I'm being engaged at the party. If I'm not being engaged or someone's interacting with me, I will go off and become the wallflower observer.
Yeah, I completely understand. It's a little difficult, and I think people have often misinterpreted me as just being shy. But I think it's just trying to find a way to just disengage from myself so that I can engage with everyone else. And I've often described myself as shy, but once people have spent some time with me, they that I'm actually not a very shy person. I think it's similar to your experience. It's just a matter of being engaged. Absolutely.
Did that change for you when you went away from LA and went off to, well, you went to Riverside, right, for your undergrad?
I did, but I commuted like all LA people. I commuted everywhere, and that included commuting to school. So I still lived in LA, but I commuted to Riverside. I left LA and went to a doctoral program in Texas. And it was when I moved away from Los Angeles that I changed a little bit. It was almost that sink or swim mentality, right? You have to engage, or you're just going to be left alone. And it was already far enough from LA where where I felt like I was alone and I didn't want to be further alone. So it took some time to kind of teach myself how to engage with other people and get out of my shell, but it still kind of creeps up on me sometimes. It's just this fear of coming out of myself.
Like a feeling of vulnerability.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put that. It's this idea of just kind of putting myself out there, right? Just opening up and not sure what part of me I should put out there, because for so long I've held everything in. It's hard to be vulnerable, and I think that's most people feel that way. So
I don't know if it ever goes away. I keep waiting for it to do that. But that feeling never disappears completely.
yeah, I'm always so mesmerized by people who show up at parties or in a social situation, and they are just very engaged, very full of life, always have something to share. I recently made a friend here in Chicago who is visiting from New Zealand, and she is just the life of the party. She is great at conversation. She is so much fun to be around, and there's never, like, she never misses a beat. Like, there's always she always has a story, and it's wonderful. And you'd think that if someone who is a writer would be full of stories and imaginative, like, ideas to share in the moment, but it's so hard. It's hard.
There's a grain of truth, I think, to writers being kind of internalized. I mean, we can't all be Oscar Wilde. It would be awesome if we could be, but
It would be. You're right. And I often think of this romanticized idea, right, that the writer or the poet is a recluse, and they're brooding, and they just they, you know they spend all this time on their own in these dark, smoky cafes. But yeah, there is a grain of truth in that.
do you like that romantic image of the poet? Is that appealing to you? The idea of the mysterious one who sits in the cafe scribbling his manifesto in the corner.
There's something that I like about that. There's something that I like about that, but I like being alone when I want to be alone with my work and with my thoughts. And sometimes I like being alone in crowded spaces. I like socializing too. I love meeting people. I mean, social media has certainly made that possible, having access to different ideas and different people and different experiences. But it might be why I love going to AWP so much, because all these people that I can kind of interact with in my own private space through social media are there. And so I can, because I've already started this kind of online dialogue with many people, when I see them, there's already kind of this, we already have a backstory, and we're able to engage. I think the hardest thing for me is meeting someone I've never met before, have had very minimal interaction with online. And then it just becomes really, really hard for me. I kind of freeze up, just because I feel that again. I feel like I'm in a vulnerable position, and I need a moment to kind of take in my thoughts and assess the situation, and be that reclusive, observant writer of people in the world. And so there's something that I like about that romantic idea of the recluse writer, but I don't want to be that person all the time. It's nice to be alone, but it's also nice to be around people. Absolutely.
I feel like we're getting into a psychotherapy session now.
Well, yeah,
So now tell me about your father. So tell me about your mother. Very interesting, We get into there. But
my goodness.
do you find it's difficult to make friends, especially as you get older, or was it always a little bit tough to do?
It's always been a little bit tough. I think I've always been kind of a loner, and as I get older, there are less avenues I feel that allow me to foster really deep connections with people, mostly because everyone is online. And well, yeah, I have some relationships with people that I maintain mostly through text and phone calls, Locally, it's been difficult. I moved to Chicago about almost a year ago. So I was living south of here, about an hour and a half drive south of here, in a very small city. And I was working for a university even farther south from here. And most of the people that I've been meeting through work, which would be right an ideal place to create community and make friends, most of them were a little bit older than I was, married with children, and I'm not married, I don't have children, and it doesn't mean that, we can't get along, but I didn't grow up around children, and so it makes me feel like I don't know how to be around kids. It's not that they're annoying or anything. I have nieces and nephews and they're nice, but
I know what you mean. A lot of coworkers I've had over the years are married, a little bit older, have families, and as someone who doesn't have children, it's hard to connect. It's hard to find that connection point to be like, we can't compare notes about child raising here. We can't get our kids to play and have a play date and hang out then. So that whole thing is off the table. So it feels almost like a high school reunion then, where you didn't really know your high school, so you go back and you're like, so, what do you do for a living? That's good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had one colleague. It was great. I had one colleague who she was single and she was a writer and but she lived where the university was, and I lived about an hour away, and so we got together and hung out a few times, but she is very busy and I am very busy, and so then that made it challenging. And here in Chicago, I've been commuting to work for the last academic year, and that took so much time. It was a 3 hour drive each way, and so that left me very little time to do anything here in the city. But I've been making a few friends over the years, over this past year here in the city, and so I'm still trying to find my community. Just I've been trying to go to more events and literary events and trying to meet people with similar interests, and it's happening, but it's happening quite slowly. But I'm glad that it is happening. So
It gets harder to make friends the older you get, I find.
yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, you don't have that kind of like built-in structure where everyone is kind of has to be at a certain place, and you see each other every day, and as a result, you kind of grow with each other. It's especially hard, I think, in large cities like this. So this is the third largest city in America. So it's almost unlikely that you're going to run into the same people day in and day out, unless you're a commuter on a train. But even then, you might not see the same faces. And as a writer, I don't have like an office that I go to that I share with other people, right? I think of like shows like Parks and Rec or Community or even The Office, where you have these spaces where people show up every day and they share experiences because they have to be there, and you become friends with people. And as you get older, that those kind of spaces, or I guess as I get older and my occupation becomes one that's much more reclusive, it becomes harder.
And there's even then, it's like college, you have dorms. You have, again, people all living together who are all kind of in the same shit pot together. It's not like somebody comes to your door and says, hey, we're all going to a movie at 10 o'clock. You want to come?
Yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it? I think of like I know this is a really old show, but I think of like Three's Company, and you have like the neighbors who are just kind of popping in to welcome you to the building. I think living in a city, people are much more hesitant to do that.
I like how you refer to Three's Company as an old show.
It is for a lot of people.
True. The biggest change for me was realizing that many of my students now live in a world where The Simpsons has always existed.
Oh, that's right. I always forget that show is still around. Is it any good anymore?
I caught a couple episodes. It's like, I don't know. There's moments, I'm told, and there's occasional episodes, but I don't know. I'm just one of those cranks who says, nope, seasons 3 through 10, after that, go to hell.
Yeah, I used to watch it all the time when it was first on, but
Aside from The Simpsons, what were some of your favorite shows growing up?
Yeah, growing up, I liked a lot of family dramas. So, family comedy dramas, maybe. So, I remember watching Growing Pains with Kirk Cameron and, oh God, Three's Company. I used to watch that as a younger kid. My sisters were older, and so they were really into that. Old reruns of The Brady Bunch. Oh God, let's see. You know things. I kind of stopped watching TV in the 90s when I was. See, I was born in the 70s. And so when the 90s rolled around, I was just getting out of high school and The Facts of Life, Growing Pains, Three's Company, Brady Bunch. Jesus. It's almost hard to remember TV in the 90s.
Have you gone back on some of the 90s to kind of like fill in the gaps?
You know, I haven't really. And I know like I a lot of people I know today are really into music and styles that are very reminiscent of the 90s, and I keep hearing like the 90s are back.
It's something I've tried to do in the last few years when a few years ago my wife was like, "You've never seen The Lost Boys?" It's like, I'm like, "Yeah, I kind of missed it." And that began this chain of like, wait, you've never seen Pulp Fiction? No. Fargo? No. Reservoir Dogs? Nope.
So it's funny, someone recently asked me, do I have a friend, a favorite friend from Friends? And that show ran for about 10 years in the 90s, right? And started in the 90s. And I know I've watched a few Friends episodes, but I couldn't tell you like anything about their person. I know Lisa Kudrow's character was like the ditzy blonde, and that's probably all I know. I did watch the X-Files. I do remember the X-Files. I was really into the X-Files. I remember the X-Files movie coming out. Like in like the late 90s. And I think I really like that I like sci-fi. I like that idea of another world kind of existing beyond the world we know. But
Did you get to see the reboot the miniseries this spring?
I did. It was okay. I was expecting so much more, but I wasn't wowed. Maybe like the middle episodes, what they were maybe what, five or six episodes, something like that. The middle episodes were great, but it started off too slow, and the end just I thought the end fell flat. It just didn't really resonate with me. It was nice to see them back together. I think Gillian Anderson looks great.
I think they both do. The chemistry is still there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've seen David Duchovny on Californication, and he was just in Aquarius, I think. And I tried watching both of those, and they were okay. But he looked really weathered in those shows. And when he came back onto the X-Files, this reboot, I was really surprised that, I don't know, they really did a really good job in his makeup. He did look good.
Yeah, you're right, Gillian Anderson. Yeah, she can stay beautiful for as long as humanity exists, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, she's great. And she's in another show, isn't she? Like, to, God, I can't even remember. She plays like a detective.
Don't know
The
what's in.
Fall. Yeah, it's great. It's a great show. It's only been around for a few years, but yeah, it's a thriller. It's set in Northern Ireland. She plays a detective. It's great.
With there's this resurgence, as you mentioned, of 90s nostalgia. It's the 20-year cycle that happens. It's not really grabbing you and such. Were you big on the 80s nostalgia a few years ago?
Yeah, I was much more interested in the 80s, and it's mostly because of my older sisters who were. I think the 80s were kind of their prime, and so whenever I would hear about hear an 80s song or see a clip of an 80s movie, I'm reminded of my older sisters and kind of like this it's like that those that the music and the films and the TV were implanted into me and they're in my subconscious because I heard them growing up. I'm familiar with them that way. So, like, I love all those John Hughes films. Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yesterday was the 30th anniversary, and Chicago did like this huge like Ferris Fest, which was pretty cool. I love 80s music, 80s style. I was talking with someone recently about music today. Like, there's this kind of resurgence of like electronic synth kind of sounds, like synth pop, synth rock. And it's all drawing from like that early 80s, what it was like new wave, inspired by like Depeche Mode and the Pet Shop Boys, who are still around. And Yeah, just I think I'm more drawn to 80s music than anything else.
Yeah, Kraftwerk is on. I think they're doing a U.S. tour later this year, and I know that Gary Numan right now is on a massive tour in the U.S.
It's
Doesn't he?
awesome. I love it.
Is that the primary thing in your record collection? Is the electro 80s style dance, new wave stuff, or does it swing a different direction?
Oh God. If I were, I mean, I've been collecting vinyl kind of, just here and there over the last decade or so. And, I really like the, so I have two older sisters. One of them was much more into like the pop bubblegum 80s. So like she really kind of influenced my like of the Go-Go's, the Bangles, Boy George. But my other sister, who was just a little bit older, was really into like Quiet Riot and Twisted Sister, so this like harder kind of I don't know,
The
I don't
hair metal.
hair metal, yeah. And I love it. Like I love listening to it. But it's not something I'd collect. But it's kind of fun to listen to Quiet Riot every now and
I got to see them perform before Kevin Dubrow died. So
No
it was
way.
an interesting show. It was, I think, what was the lineup? It was like a 4-hour Monsters of Rock kind of collective tour, and it was, I think it was Slaughter, Quiet Riot. I want to say Night Ranger was three, but I'm not sure. And then number four was Ted Nugent as the headliner.
Wow.
And it was one of the best concerts I've ever been to because I was only about 12 rows back from the stage and right in front of the amp stack. So.
I love it. That sounds so amazing.
One of those nights where you never forget and you look back and go, shit, that was great.
Yeah, I just went to see this trio. I think they're out of Germany. They're called Moderat. They're like they play electronic music, but it just, I mean, it reminds me of like early kind of 80s electro with like this blend of like Radiohead. It was really fun, and I was right in front of like the speakers, and I left that night just like not being able to hear anything. But I love it. I love live shows.
Do you go to a lot of them?
I try to. So since moving back here back into a city, I've tried to find more time to do it. I went to see another band recently called Savages, and so and it's kind of like this. The lead singer is French, but she sounds like Susie Sue of Susie and the Banshees, with like a harder kind of like Riot Girl, like electronic guitar heavy. God, I'm probably not describing things too well here, but it was great. She's French. The band is from London. They're called Savages. And then later this year, I'm going to be going, maybe in about a month or so, I'm going to be going to see this other band called Tame Impala, which reminds me of actually some of the kind of early 90s music I used to listen to. It was like psychedelic rock. They're just I don't know, they're just really uplifting. Yeah, I like going to live shows just because it's that kind of like communal experience you get to share with other people. You don't necessarily have to interact with each other, but it's nice to be like in this crowd, this space with other people who are interested in the same thing you're interested in, and we're just kind of there to just be like mesmerized by these performers and these musicians. So
I find that interesting. I'm surprisingly, for as much as I love music, I'm not a big live show person. That's something I've really tried to ask myself, is like, why don't I go to live shows? And the only answer I've come out with is every time I look at their front man, I'm like, I could do it better. I don't know.
Oh yeah, I don't like listening to live recordings. If I watch a video that's like a live recording, I'm much more interested in seeing the performance, right? The performativity of the musicians involved. But I would so much rather listen to a produced album. I'm more interested in the live aspect, more so for the kind of the the communal experience. I went to a lot of concerts in the 90s, mostly to see Britpop act. So I went to see Blur and Pulp and Supergrass and Elastica and Oasis, a lot of these kind of British bands that were popular here in America in the 90s. And those live concerts were a little scary. They were just very people were really rowdy, and there's a lot of shoving and huge mosh pits. And those were fun for me then, because I was younger and it was easier for me to just kind of get tossed around or beat around in a crowd like that. And that was kind of fun, but not so much anymore.
No, I couldn't jump in the pit anymore. I did my time. Students always look at me. I'm like, no, I was in mosh pits. And they're like, oh, Dr. Thibault was in a mosh pit. I'm like, not arena pits. We're talking basement pits. Wear work boots and dog chains, man. Yeah.
Nice. No, I'm too old for
Can't
that.
imagine it anymore. It's like, really? I gotta be in bed at midnight. Come on. You bring up your sisters quite a bit. Do you still have a close relationship with them, even though there's an age difference? Are you still close with them?
I am. Most recently, we've started using Facebook Messenger to keep in touch, which I think is really great. I used to call them, just call them and chat with them. And over the last few years, they've taken to using their smartphones the way a smartphone should be used, and they've started communicating using text. And so it's a lot easier now to just keep in touch that way. And we'll send each other videos or photos every now and then, but we message each other every few days. And my mother has started texting, which is fun and a little strange, just because my mother's what, she's going to be 70 this year. And so it's something I never imagined, being able to just text with my mother, which is kind of cool.
I know the feeling. My mother got an iPad a couple of years ago, and now she texts me and uses Facebook. And it's like, what? What happened?
It's so weird. It's so weird, but yeah, it's cool. I like it. I like being able to keep in touch with my family that way. Just because sometimes there's not enough time to just to call.
Are you close with your family as a whole?
I am. We're all very close. They all the rest of my family lives in Los Angeles, so they all live fairly close in proximity to each other. I've been away for almost a decade now. And yeah, I try to keep in touch as much as possible because I want to be close. And they're really, really open to that. They're really open to keeping in touch with me, any way that makes it possible. And I think that's probably why they started using the Messenger, because they know that it's the easiest way and quickest way to reach me. So it's worked out really well.
Do you miss Los Angeles?
Oh God.
Or is it one of those cases where, like, it's my hometown, but.
God, it's a great question. There's so many things I love about LA. AWP was recently in Los Angeles, and I was there for maybe about 10 days. So I got there a little bit early, left a little bit after the conference, and I got to spend time with my family and kind of play tourist, because it'd been a while since I'd been there, a couple years. There are things I miss about it. So there are places that I miss. So I lived in Hollywood for a long time, and there's something about being in that neighborhood, just the tourism, the traffic. Well, there's traffic everywhere in LA, but it's different there. I don't know. It looks a lot like a little mini Vegas now, with so much neon and so many lights. But I do miss LA. I miss the sun. I miss the palm trees. I miss the landscape most of all. And whenever I meet anyone in LA, or I meet people wherever I am, and they ask me where I'm from, there's something funny. Like, either I meet people who've tried to live in LA, or they tell me about being in LA and meeting other people in LA, but no one ever is really from LA. And I miss LA. I miss its landscape and the weather.
I find that interesting is that no one is really from LA.
It's true. It's true. If you spend some time in LA and you meet people, even when I lived there, people that I'd meet there weren't from there. It was a lot of people from the Midwest who had gone out and wanted to be an actor, or, well, typically just wanted to be an actor. And I mean, LA is a great place to go for the weather. It's a great place to go if you want to try to make it as a film actor. It's a lot of work, but at least you'll be in good weather for
Hence the joke that it's always raining in LA.
Right.
See that in all the old Looney Tunes. It's like sunny Los Angeles, and there's always storm clouds over it before it rains. I find that interesting because people are more than happy to say, I'm from New York, or I'm from Chicago, or I'm from Miami. But LA, now that I think of it, I've known a lot of people that have lived there, but none of them ever say I'm from LA unless asked.
That's interesting. You know, it's there was this Lana Del Rey song not too long ago where she talks about people from LA, like they have a particular attitude. People in LA, there is I think, a particular sensibility about people in LA. They're kind of distant, and I have a theory behind this. They're distant. They're difficult to get along with, and I blame it on the traffic or on the transportation system. So if you think about it, people in LA are always in their own space, right? They're always in their vehicles because public transportation is, I mean, honestly, it's not that great. So you drive everywhere to get around, and you don't have to interact with anyone unless you absolutely have to. And so that's typically at work. But because you commute to work, everyone else probably commutes to work. So you don't really establish these relationships with people at work because you don't live near each other. You don't have any other means of interacting except being in that space for that short amount of time, just like being in a car. So I think people are quite reclusive. They're not social in the same way that someone might be social, someone who might be from the Midwest or from the East Coast or New York, right? Another big city. In New York, you're in the same space. There's a really interesting poem by Sharon Olds about being in the subway in New York, and how you see people of all classes, all kinds of people, and it's because the subway is like this communal space that everyone shares, and so you're in many ways physically forced to interact with people all the time in New York. And kind of in Chicago in a similar way, because there's the decent public transportation system that allows you to get around everywhere. But these big cities, New York and Chicago, have these systems where you're forced to be in other people's faces. You're forced to interact in each other's spaces, and you learn how to interact with people in a different way. And in Los Angeles, you don't have to interact with anyone unless you have to. There's this really interesting, I think, attitude about people in LA. And how they socialize.
It sounds like you were saying almost reclusive, yet not.
It's like we're all in our own little fish bowls. You get to see and experience the world around you, but you don't necessarily have to interact with it. And in other large cities, you have to interact with people because you share the same space to get around. It's a lot easier to get around. You're more likely to create community with other people at work, or if you can all take the public transportation to get to the same office, you're more likely to, I think, or at least I believe, you're more likely to interact with him outside of work. And so you have a greater, I see there being a greater opportunity to create community and have a sense of community in these other cities. Where in Los Angeles, if you're home in Los Angeles, say you live downtown, someone in like Long Beach or Pasadena or Hollywood wants to hang out, it's an event. It has to, like, you have to take time to commute there. To get anywhere will take you at least an hour, maybe more. And you do that by sitting in your car and just waiting through traffic just to get there. It takes a lot of time to get anywhere and to do anything in LA. And so you have to really, really want to do it. And then you only get to do one event typically because it's hard to get around.
Is part of it this attitude of LA due to a combination of maybe the artifice of the entertainment industry combined with so many failed dreams? You mentioned so many people go out there to be in entertainment show business, and 90% of them or more don't make it anywhere. So I wonder if there's like a pallor over that city.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, it's a tough place to be, but I don't know. I'm trying to think of. I was recently in Miami, and Miami reminded me of Los Angeles in the way it looks, in the different types of people that are there. But Miami felt so much more pleasant. People were so friendly, so willing to interact. I felt like I could almost talk to anyone, and I would not feel comfortable doing that in Los Angeles. I think it does have a lot to do with the industry, right? That this idea that you come to Los Angeles to make it big, to be, to be a celebrity. It's a glamorous place to be, Hollywood. But I don't know, I think in Miami you can just be glamorous and just you're just in Miami. The city itself is what's glamorous, as opposed to the people in the city. Of Hollywood are glamorous, right? It's more about the location in Miami than it is about the people in LA.
Maybe that's the key then. Maybe that's the key is that the people of L the city of LA itself is the problem. The people are glamorous, but the city is not glamorous. New York has so much written about it by so many authors. There's a glamour to the city, not the people. Although the people are pretty awesome, but the mystique is in the city.
Yeah, I can certainly see that.
I haven't been there. I did not go to AWP this year, but what I've been told is that LA is this amazing city structurally. Like it's so many different architectural influences smashing into one another. I wonder if LA doesn't have an identity, like a solid identity.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. I mean, the city itself didn't like grow up until the mid to late 19th century, which is unusual because if you think about Chicago, for instance, right? I mean, the Chicago fire at the end of the 19th century, despite the fire, it still allowed the city to kind of grow up, right? That the World's Fair, the 1893 World's Fair, was kind of the rebirth, I think, of Chicago. And look at it today, right? It has like its iconic skyscrapers. And there's a sense of culture here. You have the Cubs, you have the Chicago Bears, or you have these landmarks that are all part of the city and give the city this character and flavor. But Los Angeles was growing up around the same time, and it has this. I think there it almost found its character in early 20th century with this. You see a lot of films like LA Confidential or like these kind of noir films where there LA has this art deco style to it. And all those buildings and all those places are still there, but it's almost like the city itself didn't recognize that within itself to hold onto it and to make it its own. And it just kind of faded away. Now you can you do recognize LA if you saw a picture of it, but there's nothing that you could probably identify singularly as being like, oh, that's so LA.
Maybe it just needs more time. Like it doesn't have the length of history yet.
Maybe, I don't know. And you're right, it has all these different types of architecture and landmarks that are just they're historic and they're stunning.
I will definitely, push an effort in my mind to get out there. I do want to see the West Coast one of these days. San Francisco, Seattle, even places like San Jose. Just something about it. I don't know why San Jose is in my mind, but there it is. I don't know.
If you're ever in Central California, stop into Fresno. There's a lot of great writing that came out of Fresno.
The only thing I know about Fresno is the Karate Kid Part 2 opening. But anyway, Ruben, it is. I'm looking at our time here, and it's like, wow, we have just. It seems like we've covered so much ground and yet haven't in our time together. It's like,
Wow.
I feel like there's so much more we could get into.
Wow, time has gone by so fast.
Quite often happens on this program, but before we go, I got to find out, what are you working on right now? What's coming up in the near future with the writing projects and everything, or what's just come out?
So I have some poems that are kind of out now in different journals. Most recently, Kettle Blue Review has two of my newer poems, and they're poems that I'm working on as part of my current poetry manuscript, where I'm just examining paintings, media images, almost like an ekphrasis writing project. And I'm freelance editing now, and ghostwriting and editing a number of different projects. But one of my personal editing projects is an anthology of essays that will be out late next year from the University of New Mexico Press. It's an anthology of essays on poetry and poetics, and they're all written by Latino, Latina, Latinx writers. I'm very excited about that. I think it's gonna make a great contribution to poetry and to criticism of poetry. And it's a collection that doesn't exist. And it was inspired by this anthology of essays on poetry that was put together by Dana Gioia many years ago. I thought I'd love to see something like this, a collection of critical essays on poetry written by Latinos. And it's going to happen. And I'm very excited about it.
Kick ass. That does sound awesome. I'll have to get a copy of it when it comes out. I'll have to get my hands on it, because it'd be fascinating reading. Ruben, where can the folks find you online? They want to check you out, get to know you a little bit better?
Sure. You can find me at rubenquesada.com. If you look me up on Twitter or Instagram, I'm also there under my first and last name, Ruben Quesada. Yeah, so follow me online. It'd be great. And I always like meeting new people.
And folks can find you at like Queen Mob's Tea House.
Yeah, so late last year, I took on the role of senior editor at Queen Mob's Tea House. So you can go to queenmobs.com and check out writing, art, and criticism we have there, and have fun with our Twitter account. I do.
Kick ass. Well, Ruben, it is a pleasure talking with you. You are a totally awesome person to chat with.
Thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate it.
And feel free to come back. We always give an open invitation. Feel free to come back anytime you want. Just shoot us a message. We'll have you on again, man.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I will.
All right. Take care, man. Have a good day.
You too.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.